Here's a heads up to black intellectuals. Houston Baker Jr. could be calling you out. In his new book, Betrayal, the author says some of the community's leading lights have abandoned the progressive social ideas that fueled the civil rights era. Baker says Martin Luther King's death 40 years ago marked the beginning of the end. In his opinion, black centrists and neocons have steered away from the true needs of black communities. Joining me now to talk about his indictment is Houston Baker Jr. He's a distinguished university professor of English at Vanderbilt University. Professor, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, your book doesn't pull any punches, and I don't know whether or not, you know, there's going to be some cocktail party down the road where you're going to have to face down some of the folks you criticize. I'm sure you're not afraid of that. But let's start with your personal reflections. You talk about the place that you grew up, a place that you call Little Africa. Give us a sense of how your upbringing and your perspectives shaped who you are today in this indictment of black intellectuals.
I'd be happy to talk a bit about my growing up years. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and in the deep or far west end of Louisville, segregated Kentucky, was African American, then, of course, colored or Negro, it was called, enclave by the name of Little Africa. It also had the name of Swanee Vida, which I later in college learned was for Swanee Life. It was, as I say in the book, a tangle of meandering dirt paths. The city bus stopped about four dirt road blocks from the store that my mother and father owned and worked, which was called, very originally, Baker's Market. The house next door to ours was built by my grandfather and a cousin. We had electricity and indoor plumbing, but the house next door was lighted with coal oil lanterns, and there was no indoor plumbing. I've actually seen two men come near the store and tamp down the earth on a vacant lot and build a shanty that was in every way equivalent to those makeshift structures that one sees in South Africa and the Caribbean and other places where the poor are not much thought of or thought about or dealt with by people who are not poor, and certainly not by government authorities. Little Africa was rough. It scared me to death. It produced a sense of claustrophobia. My luck was that I had parents who were college educated. They were community oriented. And for my brothers and I, it was never a question of whether we were going to get out, whether, in fact, we were going to go to college, but when we were going to get out and where we were going to go to college. So I was blessed to have those parents.
Well, Professor, when you think about some of the fundamental distinctions that you're making in this book, is really the question whether or not black intellectuals have an obligation to majority black communities, particularly ones that are dealing with issues of poverty. What's your litmus test for who you consider to be people who are acting on behalf of the broader community?
I think the litmus test is what they say in their own words and to whom they say it and the way they portray or characterize the black majority. Finally, I guess it would be a great divide. Do they plump down with a very serious and astute structural analysis of why some people live in abjection in the United States and elsewhere, or do they opt for a behavioral explanation saying that they're just apathetic and they tend toward bad behavior, and if they would just change their behavior, things would be better for them. So that's sort of in a nutshell.
You bring up a lot of different people in this book, and one of the people who you address head-on is Shelby Steele, Black conservative research fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institute. We had him on the show not too long ago about his book, but you talk about him, you argue that he has distorted the message of Dr. King, particularly in his book, The Content of Our Character. Flesh that out for me.
Absolutely. My contention would be that it wouldn't be so much character if King were still with us today, character in the sense of good behavior, as the word our, the collectivity, the creativity of the majority, the Black majority. Shelby Steele provides what I call a Christian allegory in place of structural analysis. It's not terribly original. Many people like to see Dr. King as a person who took the moral high ground and projected a racial utopia, a paradise of brotherhood, a post-racial world. And this is all for them epitomized in the I Have a Dream speech delivered at the Mall in Washington, D.C., at the March on Washington. People who do that tend, like Shelby Steele, to see what I consider the very progressive and expansively committed years of King's later life as something to be erased, something that indicates that he went wrong, because as soon as King began to talk about imperialism and to say that the United States was the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, and to talk about economic redistribution of the wealth, and to talk about essentially a global revolution, many of those who had sided with him began to disappear like jets from a missing man formation. So stopping him at the Mall means that you can make of King a Christian martyr, and to say that, for example, the Black Power movement that came afterwards, the concentration by King himself on the problems of urban ghettos and the poverty of the inner city, is somehow a serpent in the garden, somehow a unfortunate development that brings down the people, brings down Black people. But I think that's to profoundly misunderstand what King was in his final manifestation.
Well, let me jump in here, because you talk about so many different scholars, including Henry Louis Gates Jr., Cornel West, and there's that schoolyard saying that if you're pointing at someone, you've got several fingers pointing back at yourself. You yourself are a Black intellectual. You taught at an Ivy League university. Vanderbilt is a top-notch university. If you're going to take these people to task, what is your role? What is your role as a public intellectual, and how do you see yourself fulfilling it?
Well, I think one of my roles, at least the way I've pretty much defined my life and work for 35 years in the academy, and was quite lucky in serendipitous ways to begin teaching at Yale at the time of moment that's now considered, I guess, the revolutionary moment at Yale with the Black Panthers and Bobby Seale and Erica Huggins and others. So I always saw a kind of resistive undercurrent in the university, even at its Ivy League level. And I've tried to identify myself in the academy with that resistive undercurrent. And I've tried to maintain an integrity of my public appearances and what I write that never refuses to look at the fact that racism, in my estimation, is more rampant in the United States and globally than ever before. One can say, is the glass half full or half empty? I think that's mere casuistry. It seems to me that the glass is empty for the majority of Americans now, not just Black Americans. And it's not near any liquid refreshment source that I know of. The foreclosures, the economics of the present time, the war. It seems to me that Henry Louis Gates Jr. and Cornel West made a deliberate turn at a certain point in their career and decided, in the case of Mr. Gates, for example, that he was not going to do another profoundly brilliant book in
his
field.
I'm sorry. We have to wrap this up. There's a lot there, but thank you so much, Professor Baker.
Thank you.
Houston Baker Jr. is Distinguished University Professor of English at Vanderbilt University. His latest book is Betrayal: How Black Intellectuals Have Abandoned the Ideals of the Civil Rights Era.